Paid for by IMIC Incorporated.
The Cure with Amy Cabo is brought to you by IMIC Research. Life can bring many difficult situations, domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. Welcome, Amy Cabo and The Cure.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us today. I'm your host, Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure. Our show is available live on your radio through our app called The Cure, our website, amycabo.com. That's Amy with an I. Why? I don't know. And it also ends with a double E. On Roku, look for The Cure or Android TV under The Cure. Later, the show will also air on Sirius XM, Channel 131, Sundays at 5 p.m. and as a podcast. We created this show as a safe space and to show that there is hope after going through difficulties. Despite any suffering, no matter what type. I'm trying to use testimonies to that effect and inviting professionals and speakers that can help with suggestions. As a survivor, I hope to inspire others, encourage transparency, and find strength in knowing that those who suffer are not alone, and those that heal against insurmountable odds do exist. I'm also joined by Dr. Boris Nikolov.
Hello.
And today, we will discuss the so-called difficult children. Our special guest is Dr. Bob Rich. Dr. Bob Rich is an expert at helping parents with difficult children because he was the naughtiest kid in the whole world. Dr. Rich holds a PhD in psychology, where the fellow other psychologists send their most difficult cases to. Dr. Rich has written 18 books and helped numerous children and families. Dr. Rich continues to provide information and inspiration about every way people make themselves and each other miserable. Dr. Rich is aiming for essential change from a toxic global culture that encourages and rewards the worst in human nature, particularly greed, hate, and aggression, to a global culture that encourages and rewards the best in human nature, cooperation, unconditional love, decency, and compassion. Dr. Rich says, life is too short for the seriousness it deserves, and you catch more flies with honey than with vinegar. Though Bob can't imagine why people would want to catch flies. Dr. Rich's latest novel, Hit and Run, is about a 14-year-old boy who hates the world so much he kills six little kids and the crossing supervisor. Then an old lady leads him to decency and self-respect. Dr. Rich, thank you for being with us on The Cure.
Thank you for the honor of having me here. I hope I'm going to survive it. I hope I'm going to enjoy it.
Well, for those who may not know, Dr. Rich is joining us from Australia, and it really is an honor to have you with us, sir. Dr. Rich, you've said you're an expert in helping parents with difficult children because you were the naughtiest kid in the world. You want to tell us about that?
Well, it all started when my parents got divorced. My mother had to go to work, and I was cared by my grandmother and her maiden sister, and this was great. I'll just give you one example. Sweetheart, it's time for dinner. Come to the table.
I don't want any.
Come on, darling. It's lovely.
It's yuck.
They were bigger than me, and I was gently forced to sit in front of the plate. So, nudge, nudge, and it was on the floor. Oh, dear, what a mishap. Never mind, I'll whip you up a lovely omelette.
I hate omelettes.
Don't shoot, it's rude. And last week you loved it.
Well, now I hate it.
The omelette gets plonked in front of me and sits there until it becomes cold and leathery. And then Auntie says the words I've been hanging out for. Oh, my little darling, you must eat something. Now, how about a lovely piece of the chocolate cake? One day I was rudely snatched from this heaven. Mother had the temerity to get married again. I was forced to move to a strange apartment
with everything in the wrong places and all the wrong sounds and all the wrong smells and no old ladies to manipulate.
Oh, goodness.
And worst of all, it had him. It was his. And I was there only because my mother wouldn't have come without me. He made the rules, and my stupid mother refused to back me up. When I tried the not eating trick, it flopped flatter than grandmother's omelette. He just said, "That's all right, you're not hungry, you can have it when you are." And I had last night's horrible ray-warm leftovers put in front of me for breakfast. Can you imagine?
No.
You can see this was a declaration of hostilities. So I started a guerrilla war. Every day, horrible things happened to him, and always so I couldn't be blamed. You know, the angelic look was my stock in trade. And I won every battle, but he won the war.
Oh, goodness.
This was in Hungary, and there was a revolution in 1956. So he organized an escape to the West in two trucks, and then I went on the first truck. Then he sent the second truck away and kept the rest of the family behind. So in this way, he prevented the murder. We both knew that by the time I was big enough, either I'd murder him or he'd murder me.
Wow.
So I ended up in Australia, where I was steered onto a good path by several angels, people like my school principal and the scoutmaster and the mother of one of my friends, people like that. So I was saved by my stepfather. In the old days in Australia, people were criminals, or supposed criminals were sent out, transported for the term of their natural life. Well, I was transported for the term of my natural life to Australia.
Wow. I mean, but your parents, they seemed really nice, and your grandparents. What do you suppose were some reasons for disobedience?
Well, I was a spoiled little brat.
Well, can you be more specific? And disobedience in general, it happens a lot these days, if you've noticed.
Well, it's always happened. There are various ways of controlling it.
Are we guilty?
It's not necessary.
Are we guilty of doing too much for our children? I mean,
I don't
trying
find
to
guilty.
Constantly please I'd, them I'd like, for us for to make ourselves feel better?
Amy, I'd like to make a distinction between guilt and responsibility.
Okay.
Guilt is a good motivator. If you feel guilty about something, that then you're determined to make changes because it feels awful. But whether you feel guilty or not doesn't change what happened in the past. So once you're determined to make changes, you can throw away the guilt. What counts is responsibility. And there is no such thing as a mistake, only learning experiences. If I now know that what I did before was a mistake, then I've learned, I've become a better person, and I can be thankful for the experience. And if I've done damage, then I need to make restitution. But that's all. Anyway, it's not necessarily the parents' fault. But
no.
At my blog.
No, it's not, but you know that we don't come with a book of instructions when it comes to our kids. And I have to admit, I grew up in a very strict household, but I think I do quite the opposite in my household. I'm very blessed that my kids are nice kids, but I know that I could provide, for example, more structure and more discipline. I mean, not every kid talking to them and explaining things to them works without attaching a consequence. And could that be a reason for disobedience that maybe we don't follow through with a learning lesson, for example, a way for the kid to learn the lesson?
I agree with that, yes. Look, the golden middle holds in everything. That's in the Bible, and it's the central tenet of Buddhism includes the golden middle. Too much is bad, too little is bad. If you harshly punish children, they end up traumatized.
Right.
If you allow children to do whatever they want, they get spoiled. There's the golden middle.
Well, I found out this great idea.
Anyway, what you were saying, the other aspect is, no, we don't come with a user's manual as parents, but it's okay to be imperfect. What research shows is that as long as you have the right attitude to the kids, a very wide range of treatment practices will raise fine adults. And the right attitude is unconditional acceptance, love, but consequences, as you said.
I also got this other idea from, I was learning about the different kinds of moms, and there was this one mom in particular that had a lot of children, and she said, I don't give anything to my children, not even normal privileges, unless they earn it. On a daily basis, they have to earn all their privileges. They just don't get things. They have to earn it. So I thought that was a very neat idea. And so I've tried that. It's worked well because they tend to do things better that way. And you get less of the disobedience.
As long as it's done with love.
Yes, yes. I mean, you want the kid to feel proud of themselves.
One of the worst things you can do to kids is conditional love. I love you if you behave. It's terrible. It's destructive.
Right. Well, you do
Whatever you do, I love you, but I will not have you talk to me in that tone of voice. Right?
Right.
When you've just calmed down, you can come out and explain yourself, and we'll talk it over. But don't you talk to me like that. But I love you anyway. Well, you don't have to say I love you anyway, but you can say this firmly but with love. That's the right attitude.
Of course.
I hate you for screaming and swearing at me like that. Get out of my house. That's wrong.
I understand that you're angry. This is not the right time.
Exactly. That's fine, yes.
That you acknowledge your feelings because you care, right? That's the idea.
Yep.
But
so as long
not
as
all
have
of
this
us.
Attitude.
Well, not all of us had the best examples growing up. you know, you live as you learn. I mean, Boris had great parents. What were your parents like, Boris?
Oh, really nice. Yeah.
You know that Boris's parents never laid a hand on them. Never. One of the kids ended up being a journalist. The other kid ended up being a doctor. I come from a family of nine where they were old school, believed in corporal punishment. They took, you know, the Bible saying, spare the rod, spoil the child. They took that literally. And I think I only speak to one sibling.
How is the thing in Australia? Is it okay to corporally punish a child as long as he's not leaving marks?
It used to be. Now, well, let's not worry about which country. We can look at research.
Right.
Because
corporal punishment,
everyone's the same everywhere.
Beating people, verbal abuse, physical abuse, they may control the behavior, but they have unfortunate consequences. They're definitely traumatizing. Like, so there are certain messages you send to a child. One of them is, I'm bigger than you and stronger than you, so I have a right to hit you. So what happens when that kid goes to school and there's a smaller child who gets in his way? He becomes a bully. Well, there's a good chance, you know? What happens when that person is an adult and he gets married and his wife annoys him? What happens when he is the boss and some employee annoys him?
How can the kid understand that they've done something wrong if they feel like a victim because they've been beat on? But if you give them a consequence and you talk to them and you explain what the consequence is about, then they might actually think about it. But
that's exactly right, yeah. Yeah, and then another consequence of physical punishment or harsh punishment is I'm helpless. I can't do anything. I'm overpowered. So what happens when she's 17 and goes out with a boyfriend who starts getting heavy on her, you know, starts pushing her to have sex, and she can't say no because he's more powerful? or they're in a group and someone offers some drug around.
Yes.
She can't say no.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes. For those that are just tuning in, this show is focusing on so-called difficult children. We are joined by Dr. Bob Rich. I'm your host, Amy Cabo, and you're listening to The Cure. We will continue talking with him.
Love is the answer, God is the cure, reveals from a very sincere and honest position Amy Cabo's life, a warrior who didn't give up and achieved the dream of her life. You can get to know more about her and her story on www.godisthecure.com or buying her book on amazon.com. And now we continue with Amy Cabo and The Cure on 880 The Biz.
Welcome back to the show. For those that are just tuning in, I'm Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure. If this is your first time tuning in, we are joined by Dr. Bob Rich, and we're talking about difficult children. Some kids come from good families and can turn out to be quite the opposite. Whereas, at the same time, some kids can come from bad families and turn out okay. It's not always the parents at fault, and it's not always the kids doing. But when it comes to more serious issues, the ones that we deal with today, where kids can turn into school shooters, is there such a thing as a kid beyond reach? Dr. Rich, is there such a thing? Are kids just plain unmanageable? Are some kids just plain unmanageable?
Well, I have worked with families where the child didn't respond to anything anyone tried. I've had colleagues work in residential facilities where they lock away the really destructive kids. And there is a program which is called behavior management. It's basically what you were talking about before, very, very strictly consequences. And nowadays it's all computerized. If you do the right things, you buy, you earn computer credits, which you can use for things like sweets after dinner or certain, and being allowed to engage in certain activities, whatnot. So that kind of slow, regular, consistent behavior management can be applied in the family too, although, of course, it doesn't have to be as rigid.
Would this kind of behavioral management work with a child that has sociopathic tendencies or characteristics? Because from what I'm aware, there is no cure or treatment for sociopathic tendencies.
Well, there is one thing that will work.
Okay.
It's a question of leading the child to it. And actually, this is the theme of my book, Hit and Run, that you mentioned.
Right.
It's a perfect illustration. It's fictional, but it's very real in terms of the research. What counts is if the child strongly identifies with an admirable role model. In April this year, I posted a blog about basketball star LeBron James. At my blog post, bobbing around. This man had a terrible childhood, but now he's a star, he's earned lots of money, and he has established a school for disadvantaged kids and is leading 240 kids at a time to a good life. So here is someone who's made good and he's leading others. So if you can trick your child to model on someone admirable, a hero on the news or in a movie, an older child you approve of, a teacher perhaps, whatever. Again, at my blog, bobbing around, if you go there, there is a tab saying stories. And one of the stories is, I'm quoting our kids. My latest book out is nonfiction. It's From Depression to Contentment, a Self-Therapy Guide. And I wrote that story to be included in there, but my publisher wanted the book to be small, keep under 50,000 words. So instead, I put it up on my blog. Anyway, that's actually a person I know, wasn't a client, about my age, but this person's story are fictionalized. I'm not even saying if the person was male or female. The hero of my story is female. But I'm quoting our kids, tells you how even the worst children can be led to a good life. And so does Hit and Run. So,
yes, it's amazing.
Yeah, sorry, go on.
And kids are dealing with so many things in today's world. from ADHD, whether they really have ADHD or not. Is it something that the kid really has, or the parents just misinformed? The kids are suffering from depression or anxiety or both. And what kind of advice could you give parents that are dealing with these kind of issues, or even step parents?
Okay, Amy. Let's just take them one point at a time. ADHD.
Okay.
First, kids don't have ADHD. They act in certain ways. It's a behavior pattern of habits, and habits can be changed. There has been, in the past few decades, an explosion in the number of cases of diagnosed ADHD. And this is because of changed expectations.
Or isn't it because it's just wrongly diagnosed? Like, I mean...
Yes. Well, let's just qualify this. There may well be an actual increase because of all the poisons in our environment. You know, all the pesticides and genetically modified food may well be causing damage that results in hyperactive behavior. But...
You were talking about a change in expectations.
So casting that aside, at the time of life when kids are expected to sit still and pay attention, they're human dynamos. They're human puppies that like running around. So they wriggle and talk and so on. So I agree with Boris. I would say maybe about 10% of kids diagnosed with ADHD actually qualify for it.
Right.
And when kids like that have been brought to me, I have a little test that anybody can apply.
Okay.
I say to little Johnny, let's play a game. Pretend you're a tiger. All right. Now pretend you're a monkey.
That sounds like fun.
I like fun. Actually, I don't have a sense of humor at all. I'm a grumpy old fellow.
That's
but
funny.
Everybody laughs at me like you just did. And that shows that they have a sense of humor. You have a sense of humor.
At least someone's got to do it right.
Anyway, after the monkey, it might be a world champion boxer. Little boys love that. All right. Now be your teacher when she's annoyed with you. All right. Now be a table. Well, each time I let them do it until they stop. Most kids will do the table, which is, down on all fours, motionless, for at least half a minute. A kid who genuinely suffers from ADHD will be lucky to last 10 seconds. They'll start wriggling.
Right.
They won't be able to do the table.
Wow. What a good test. Yeah. I didn't know that.
That's so easy and free. I love it.
It has to be embedded in other activities.
Yeah? Of course.
So, many kids accused of ADHD are normal, lively knee-biters. But often, they're the first son of a woman who's had no brothers, possibly not even male cousins, and who either a first child or the previous children were girls. Well, you get a boy. A boy is much more active on the average than a girl.
That's true.
What's wrong with this child? And similarly, many teachers don't understand the psychology. And so how to manage a kid who's more active than you want them? First of all, whatever they do, make them feel loved, although some of the behaviors are not allowed.
How about just be more accepting, more tolerant? Okay, just let the kid be a kid.
Yeah.
I mean, are kids actually really going through anxiety? I know for a fact because we work with this. I know that kids do go through depression. It is an issue because there's a lot of... especially
Could I just give my recommendations for how to cope with a kid who is more active than you want?
Sure.
Give him plenty of opportunity for vigorous physical action in between sit-down activities.
Very good.
Just start wriggling. Everybody out, do a lap around the oval, and we'll come back. Enroll the child in activities like a martial art, football, basketball, wrestling, swimming, athletics. Appreciate and reward their improvements in schoolwork, even if they've lost a lot and they're far below what other kids can do. Because they might have had years of learned helplessness and you need to undo that.
So if you do these things, does this kid need medication?
No.
No, look, Ritalin and other medications have terrible side effects. It's much better to do without them if you can.
Nice.
Look, I have an association with the Steiner School. You heard about Steiner education?
No.
No.
Rudolf Steiner was a German philosopher, and he developed this form of education, which is very effective. Everything is project-based, and everything is creative. And they learn music, dancing, all sorts of things. Anyway, this particular school near me has a class for normal kids with normal intelligence who've had a couple of years of school and have learned absolutely nothing.
Wow.
So they get this class manages the school farm. Excuse me. They look after the chickens, milk the cow, grow vegetables and flowers, prune fruit trees.
Working with the earth. Very therapeutic.
Yeah.
Love it.
And every activity is used to teach them mathematics, English, and things like elementary science, history, geography, and stuff. Right, we'll go out and collect the eggs. Now, hey, do you know where those chickens originally come from? They come from Southeast Asia. Look, here is a map. This is where they originally came from. And you could take a wild chicken from there, and one of our chickens, and if they mate it, they would produce offspring. They haven't actually changed much. Okay? So suddenly you get them interested in Thailand.
Yes.
So this is the way to do interesting education.
And Dr. Rich,
within a year, typically... Sorry, yes?
Yes, I mean, I think it's very important to have them involved, at least the kid that's more hyper, to have them always involved in activities and get them entertained, and also not just entertained, but so that they can get their energy out and they can be tired afterwards and not be disruptive. But I really want to go into the depression aspect of what kids go through, because I wonder if that plays a role in the violence of kids, in the role of the kid that you wrote a book about.
Yes.
And it's something that can be very serious because it's also the cause of suicides. So when we come back, I'd really like to talk about that, if that's okay. For those that are tuning in, I'm your host, Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure. Yeah. You can listen every Friday at 2 p.m. on your radio or amycabo.com or Leader After Podcast.
And now we continue with Amy Cabo and The Cure on 880 The Biz.
Welcome back, and thanks for joining us. This is The Cure, and I'm your host, Amy Cabo. Live every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern. If you're just tuning in, we're joined by Bob Rich. And we're talking about helping with difficult children. Will you love me less if you knew the places that I've been? If you knew the things that I've done? Like that song that said, we're all in this together in this world, and we're all sinners. We've all done bad things, but God always forgives us. And we have to accept that even though there is God and there's goodness, there's also evil. There's also bad. But that doesn't mean that goodness does not exist. That doesn't mean forgiveness does not exist or acceptance does not exist. And that's where it comes to this novel that Dr. Rich wrote, Hit and Run. It was a 14-year-old who was a multiple murderer. A multiple murderer that would turn into a good person. You wouldn't think this was possible. Would you have loved him less if you knew what he'd done? Would you even have thought he had a chance? Dr. Rich, please tell us, how did this story come about?
Oh, I thought you wanted me to talk about helping kids who are highly depressed.
Right.
But I'm happy to...
Yes, if you could do both, because I would assume this 14-year-old suffered from depression, unless I'm wrong.
Oh, yeah, he did. Well, all right, let's talk about how did the book come about. When you're doing psychotherapy, you cannot help a person by sharing the problem. You need to keep what's called professional distance.
Okay.
If you're in a deep hole and I'm supposed to pull you out, I can't pull you out by jumping in with you, can I?
Right.
So I need to keep my distance so I can help you. Well, I had a victim of crime client referred to me who was a blind old gentleman, and a bunch of teenagers bashed him up, and they also hurt his old seeing eye dog. Well, I have way too much empathy, so I was outraged. But I couldn't help him. I had to focus on his trauma, not on my emotion. So there is a standard technique for dealing with that, which is called displacement. I invest my emotion in something else. So after my first session with him, I started what I thought would be a short story. I invented a far worse criminal teenager, and I was going to give him just retribution. So I invented two people, the 14-year-old mass murderer, and then I needed a witness. So I invented an 84-year-old lady, Sylvia, who was nearly killed herself. And the book is actually Sylvia's journal. She wrote down everything that happened during her 9 months of contact with the boy who was originally called Chuck. He was called Chuck by his mother because she chucked up all through pregnancy. So even his name was a form of abuse. Oh. So Sylvia renamed him Charlie. The trouble was that because Sylvia was dictating and I was just typing into the computer what she told me, everything was from her point of view. So she was not interested in punishment. The story became one of the power of compassion, you know, the love in the Bible, although it's not a religious book at all.
Nice.
So it's done quite differently from how I would write it myself. For example, the books I write, if a character swears, I just let it rip on the page. Whatever words they say, I record faithfully. But Sylvia couldn't do that because in her youth, she was told that obscenities should never be spoken or written. So she sort of blanks them out.
Okay.
And a few readers have thought that odd, but what could I do? I have to do as I'm told, don't I? I can't be rude to an old lady. So the story goes through many twists and that surprised me as they were revealed to me. And I found the ending particularly beautiful, and many reviewers have said the same. But I won't tell you what that is.
We don't need to. I think we'll just read it.
I just have to read it, yeah. But basically, Sylvia is Christian, but never goes to church or anything. She just acts in a way that's natural to her. But, you know, it's not only Christian. All the great religions have the same message.
But Sylvia wasn't able to identify this 14-year-old with homicidal ideas.
Well, what happened was that Sylvia happens to be an artist. So she drew his picture. As he flashed by in the car, she saw him and then drew his picture, and the police used that to arrest him. But
how did the 14-year-old turn good? What's the secret?
Why did he turn bad first?
Well, he was a murderer.
As I was writing this, I wasn't thinking of the scientific evidence, but we've talked about this before. What happened was they had a contact, which at first, in the beginning of the book, seems quite mysterious, but later on, the reason for it is revealed. And I won't take up time talking about that. But the night after this terrible event, he appears to her. And he swears at her, and if he could, he'd bash her up. And she's just lying in bed looking at him, sort of projected on her wall. And this contact continues, and she continues to treat him the way she treats everybody, which is respect and consideration.
Maybe he wasn't used to that. You know? And is this based on a true story?
But the one person this boy loves in anywhere is his 6-year-old little brother, or half-brother. Nobody knows who's the father or father of them. And she uses this as a lever. She helps him to do something for the little boy by managing not to swear to his school principal. And that's the start. That's the little wedge that starts the change. And after a few contacts, he decides that she's pretty good. I mean, she's the first person ever to
that treated him normal. Maybe people were afraid of him, and that was the only reason they treated him normal, which is probably why... Which is probably why teenagers go through depression and things like that. Because if they're different in any way, sometimes kids can really get on their case and tease them. and there's bullying in the schools, and kids are under a lot of pressure, and you don't know which kid is going to lose it. For example, the kid that did the school shooting, the kid in the high school were afraid of him. He had said things and his actions, and he was very much of a loner. Do you have any advice for students or step parents that they can pick up on these things?
It's quite possibly the parents might not be able to, because there probably is hostility between the parents and the child by then. It probably needs to be an outsider. But teachers, youth workers and so on, like I said, this basketball star, LeBron James, he's leading them away.
But, what I'm saying, Dr. Rich, is if there is a child, how can we, not having the trained eye, not knowing much, like the example that you gave us, to know if a kid is autistic, if they're able to do the fourth command at the table. Now, how would we be able to pick up, for example, there's a lot of things that could have been said, see something, say something. And some of these school shootings could have been prevented if people had said more. And so I'm trying to bring more awareness to the situation. And I know that you've worked with very difficult children. So what kind of advice can you give us to be looking out for, and what can we do to help?
Well, if you notice a child like that, it's giving the child respect. Often, if the child is given responsibility, put in positions of qualified supervised leadership. In my book, From Depression to Contentment, I actually have a chapter on what a parent can do to help a child who has strong depression or anxiety or both, because they often go together.
That is so needed.
The thing is, you can't talk them out of it.
No.
Because part of it is the inner belief of helplessness. The world is a terrible place, and it's guaranteed to continue that way forever. What's the point of doing anyway? So you can't get them to snap out of it. What you do is you need to learn to act in the way you would want your child to behave as an adult. So if you want your child to be depressed, then when you're under stress, act depressed. If you want your child to be strong, then when you're under pressure, even though you may feel depressed, act as if you were strong. And there's a little tool for this, which is quite fun.
Children are sponges.
Suppose that mum is pretty nervy and the kid is worse. Or mum says, "Darling, I've decided to stop being such a worrywart. I'd like you to help me." All right, so you pick on one habit in specific observable detail. You know, when we were about to go out, I ran around the house several times looking to see if there's anything I've forgotten. I want to stop that. If you notice me doing that, say something like, "Mum, you asked me to tell you not to do this, but to take a breath." That will genuinely help you to change the habit. But also, you're now modeling for your child. And then you say to the kid, "If I remember to act calmly and in an organized manner, sure you have noticed and praised me for it." Now, this gives power to the child, right?
Yes.
And it's modeling to the child how to change behavior, and both mom and daughter will come out of the anxiety much better.
And they can be there for each other. And they can be there for each other.
Look,
because
I had a lady who had a very responsible job. She was an emergency ward nurse. And she worked long shifts and came home to her 4-year-old daughter and then started screaming at the daughter. And then she noticed that it was traumatizing the daughter, so she came to me for help. So we worked out what to do. She went home and said, "Look, next time I come home from work and start screaming at you, darling, please say, 'Mom, you're not doing this anymore.' And if I remember to come home calm, then praise me for it." And they agreed on that. And then Mum said, on my advice, all right, now let's have a secret signal. So if there are other people present, you can remind me that I'm going in the old way and throwing a tantrum by giving me the secret symbol. Now what should the secret symbol be? So the little four-year-old girl put her thumb on her nose and wiggled her fingers. Isn't that perfect?
Yeah.
They both burst out laughing.
Yeah.
You can't
yeah,
be angry
I mean, talking about laughing, my daughter, you know, my 11-year-old, she's talking and I'm and I said, oh, Mimi, you know, go hug the tree. When you hug the tree, you'll learn to be nice again. So she thinks it's funny, you know, the power of nature. Mm. She goes, hugs the tree. All of a sudden, she's so well behaved and so nice. I love it. I have fun, too.
That's perfect, yes. Anyway, you also mentioned step-parents.
Yes.
I had a friend who married an older man with two kids. And for years, she thought that her struggles were because of the step relationships. Then her friends started having kids of their own, and they were facing the same problem. So she realized it was just a parent-child thing. My son teamed up with a lady who had two little girls. At first, the 6-year-old more or less ignored him, but the 4-year-old gave him such a hard time, he thought she was possessed by an evil spirit, wanted to exorcise her. I thought, no, nice. Madam. She was feeling resentful because he dared to step into her father's place, and she saw him as competition for mum's love. So what he needed to do, and what he did, was first of all to leave all discipline to the mother until gradually over a couple of years the child accepted him.
Wow, that's incredible. But the beautiful thing is that we can be there for each other, just the example that you gave with the mother and daughter, and there always is someone that can be there for you. I think God puts people in our way that can help us, that are good for us. Like, I know you've been good to a lot of kids and a lot of families. Thank you so much, Dr. Rich, for your participation. We've come to the end of the show. And it has been a pleasure. Aww. Thank you so much.
Oh, can't we keep going a bit longer?
I wish
we're going to invite you again to another show, Doc, if you're available.
I wish we did have more time.
I could talk about an entirely different topic, depression, for example.
Absolutely.
Which, as you said, is a terrible problem.
You're welcome back anytime. Thank you all for all the listeners. A big thank you. And for our special guest, Dr. Bob Rich, co-host Boris, and the great Wanda.
Yay!
For more information on Dr. Rich can be found on amycabo.com under guests. I'm your host, Amy Cabo. This has been The Cure. Thank you for listening.
Life can bring many difficult situations. Domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. The issue is not stay there, but to overcome all obstacles and show that with the love of God, your husband, and your family, you can succeed. Love is the answer, God is the cure, reveals from a very sincere and honest position Amy Cabo's life, a warrior who didn't give up and achieved the dream of her life. You can get to know more about her and her story on www.godisthecure.com or buying her book on amazon.com.
If you suffer from persistent depression, call Neurosciences Medical Clinic to schedule a free consultation for new effective FDA-approved treatments such as intranasal ketamine or NeuroStar TMS, a no-medication treatment. Neurosciences Medical Clinic. Call now, 786-600-7005. Neurosciences Medical Clinic, 786-600-7005, 786-600-7005.
The Cure with Amy Cabo was brought to you by IMIC Research, 786-310-7477 or www.godisthecure.com. Tune in every Friday at 2 p.m. for The Cure with Amy Cabo right here on 880 The Biz.